Recorded in the WGMU studios, The Megaphone is a weekly internet podcast about journalism, media, and the students active in the industry. And now, here is your host, Igor Stoyanov.
Welcome to The Megaphone. This week, we went to the Professor Roger Smith's office and talked with him about very interesting topics concerning media, journalism, and students' motivation. He is a professor at the Department for Communication at George Mason University, but also he serves as an advisor at Student Media. He's a very experienced professional in the field of media and communication, and I hope you will like this interview and you will learn a lot about journalism, about media, and about student motivation or maybe even managing media. Those are very interesting topics, especially for me as a foreigner here in the United States, because I am, as you know, maybe from my previous podcasts, I am a journalist working here now in George Mason, but I'm a journalist in Macedonia. So I'm here to find out more about journalism, about media, and of course about journalism studies. My name is Igor, and of course I'm your host today. So we are going to listen to the interview that we had with Professor Roger Smith. Roger, thank you for being on my podcast. I'm very excited having you here on the Megaphone.
Sure.
First of all, can you explain me a little bit about your position at Student Media and in George Mason?
I have a dual position here. Half of my job is serving as an instructor in the Department of Communication. I have what's called a 3-3 load, which means I teach 18 credits over the course of a calendar year. I teach media management. I teach how to do radio through radio workshop. And every other year I teach a course called radio production, which is the opposite of on-air work in radio workshop. Every other year I teach sports and the media, which will take a look at sports in our culture, the role that media plays in bringing sports to us. And once a year I teach writing across the media, teaching you how to write journalistically across several different platforms. That's half of my job. The other half is serving as faculty advisor for our campus online radio station, WGMUradio.com. The organization is still a student organization. It's students running it, students supervising other students. I serve more as an advisor to help the students direct the station into the goals that they want to achieve. Give them advice on legal or budget, other things, but it's still the students that make the decisions. Part of my duty also with the station, two major things I do. I do or lead 2 1-week sessions of radio camp for the students locally. These are high school and middle school students who get a chance for a week to produce radio shows and pre-recorded material. And also I serve as executive producer for our basketball coverage. When I say our, the station's coverage, we cover men's and women's basketball for athletics. So we provide the learning opportunities for students to understand how to produce a live broadcast. So
that's a lot of job.
It's a terrific job. This is the best job I've had. We're going on my 24th year here at Mason, and I've had the privilege of working with some terrific students, some who have gone on to national broadcast opportunities, some have gone on to be parents, some have gone on to be other things, but the chance of working with students has been a golden opportunity and the best thing I've done in my career.
And you're not graduated from Mason.
I graduated from James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of everybody, yeah, other professional staff member who graduated from George Mason. No, I went down to the middle of Virginia and I graduated in 1986 with a degree in communication arts. That fostered my love for radio, which led to a professional career for about 8 years. In the interim, I earned a master's in business administration from Shenandoah University in Winchester.
Okay, and I've read a lot of comments from the students about your lectures. A lot of them are saying that you...
They catch up on sleep, nap, all that.
No, they said that they have a lot of work on your classes. What are they working on your classes?
I want them to critically think. Not so much work, but I want them to critically analyze situations. I want them to succeed, but I'll give them the basics of how to accomplish different types of assignments, for example, in radio, how to deliver an on-air break, tapping into my experience of working in radio professionally since I was in high school. That was about a total of 13 years between high school, college, and professional. I want to put them in situations where they can excel, but I also want them to critically think, how can I make this better? Or in my lecture classes, what is the situation? And if it's a leadership position, how do I become a better leader to analyze what's happening in the news and other things? If there's a lot of work, it's going to be a lot of critical thinking and deep thinking. Mm-hmm. I want them to, because that's a good skill to have.
Yeah, they do case studies also. Yes. What kind of case studies? Can you give us some example for it?
For example, my media management class, this is where we're going to teach you how to be a leader in a media environment. We're looking at one where they have to slash the department budget of a radio station by $150,000, yet everybody's going to get a 1% raise. How are you going to do that? Also, we're looking at developing a show that a platform like Netflix or Hulu would want to pick up, because it might be a different type of program or content that the traditional or heritage networks might want. So I want them to think about that, maybe make a sales presentation or some type of media kit to expose them to what these media organizations are looking for in their day-to-day operations.
You're teaching radio, as you said. I'm sure that you've heard that Denmark is closing all the FM frequencies. So all the new smartphones are missing FM radio as an option on the smartphones. So are you concerned about the future of radio and your job?
I'm concerned not about my job. I'm going to be here till I'm 89 because I've got to work. Second of all, there is a chip inside a cell phone that you can activate to get FM frequencies.
Really?
I saw one organization that's going to allow that chip to be activated. But why do the cell phone companies not want to activate that chip? If there's a chance for you to go to tunein.com and listen to a radio station, they'd rather have you use your monthly allowance of technology and all that and pay towards that. But there is that ability to listen to stations either through the traditional cell phone or through the chip that can be activated within a cell phone. But as far as the future of radio, I've often said that I say this about the future of television or any type of heritage or traditional media. If it's still making money, it's going to stick around. So far, it is sticking around. Is it a great investment to buy a radio station? No, not really. There is a major or two major companies in this country that may go bankrupt. They own 800 radio stations combined. What if this company goes belly up? Who's going to buy these stations? Who's going to employ those people? Also, I often say that the consumer now has control of the playlist. They have control of when, where, and how they want to consume content. They're not limited to finding an FM radio. They can download stuff to an iPad or a cell phone, podcasts they can listen to. What traditional radio still has to do, what traditional television still has to do, is focus in on local. That's what's going to separate different media outlets and platforms from what people are interested in, like Netflix and Hulu and Spotify. Mm-hmm. We have a generation who, quite frankly, doesn't even consider a radio career as a priority because they have other options. To make it attractive, I've often said that the heritage media, television, radio, they have to play hopscotch with their customers. in radio, you have to have them go back and forth between your website to the traditional radio and back and forth. And what I mean by that is on your radio station, you can say, we've got more content from our morning show on exclusively on our website. Go to such and such website. On Twitter, they can say, we're giving away tickets to the big concert. Be listening on our traditional radio station for that.
They should be connected.
Yeah, they have to work in concert, and television has to do that as well. And as far as I'm concerned, these are still good mediums. I'm not sure if a station, as how a lot of content is delivered, is a great investment right now.
Yeah, but even though it can die as a technology, the radio journalism is still going to live, right? Throughout the internet
Journalism overall, I think, is still going to be there.
I mean, radio journalism.
Radio journalism really has subsided. Because radio stations aren't interested in paying all the salaries, all the equipment, all the overhead that's needed to do a proper 24/7 news operation. Now, in this market, we have two stations that do a lot of news coverage. One of them bills $64 million a year, and they do 24/7 news coverage. So you can still do that, but in this era of deregulation where radio stations are looking to hire less people and because of technology to automate broadcast days, they really don't need a lot of need for journalism as far as radio. But should you still learn radio journalism? Sure, because it's still a pretty interesting idea of presenting journalism. NPR is a good example, because that's always going to be around, but it could be in the form a podcast delivered like that.
What are the most important things that students should learn about radio?
That this is still one-on-one communication.
Okay.
This is something where people can talk to somebody in a one-on-one situation as if I'm talking to you right now. One of the phrases I ban from my beginning radio students, and I need a reminder for my advanced radio students, don't say "for those of you out there." Mm-hmm. Because if we are on WGMUradio.com, we don't have 8-9 people huddled around a computer screen. It's one-on-one communication.
One guy who's listening.
So personalize the conversation. That's what I think still makes radio is interesting, and that's something that I like to teach students. Learn to communicate. If you're having a conversation, don't forget that person who has downloaded your podcast or is listening on the stream. Keep them involved and maybe invite questions or something like that. But the one things I want them to learn, this is still a one-on-one medium. It's a great medium. And it's still a great communication medium. It can be a personalized medium.
Okay, and when students first come here at the student media, do you have any formal training for them? Do you have any agenda that they are supposed to do and go through while they are here, maybe for the first few weeks? I'm interested because I work something similar back mm-hmm. home, so I want to know how do they get into the student media in the first place.
Okay, for student media overall, you're not limited by being a communication or English major. Student media is open to all different types of majors. It's open to people who want to create content. You have an idea for a 2-minute television show? We have the facilities to help you create that. You want to write opinion or feature or news pieces? We have the location with a student organization that covers news here. What if you like to write poetry? What if you like to write short stories? What if you are a feminist and you want to write pieces that will be focused in on people interested in the a feminist agenda? We have journals and student-led organizations for that as well. Oh, by the way, we also have a radio station where it's online. It's not terrestrial. But we can give you a platform where you can create your own show because commercial radio doesn't allow a lot of that creativity. So this is an opportunity here for a chance for you to grow, to develop content that other people are going to be interested in. and it's not found in the working world. So this is a great opportunity to be creative and to tap into whatever you like to do.
Yeah, we're going to speak about the students' motivation in general or in journalism. What has changed over the years? Many says that students or young people's attention span is very low, for example. Mm-hmm. Is anything is changing in the field of students' interest in journalism? What do you think?
They see journalism as not that 9-to-5 job.
Okay.
That's tough to understand, because I equate journalism, I put it up there with the medical field, with law, some of these standard things like police, fire. Those are some of the cornerstone careers, because anybody can make money, but not everybody can make a difference. And in journalism, you can do that because you can report on things as local as what's happening with taxes for your through the Board of Supervisors, all the way to what the President and Congress and the Supreme Court are discussing. It's a great opportunity for that. Now, as far as students, is there a short attention span?
Yeah,
but they've grown up on getting content very quickly. And so media producers have to react to a lot of that. What else?
Yeah, are you satisfied generally from the students' interest in working here? As I know, you have a lot of students here, around 80 students per year that are part of the radio, television, newspapers, websites, everything here in the students' media. Mm-hmm. Are you personally satisfied with the interest from the students all over George Mason?
As far as working here, the interest, I've seen a lot of students come through here, write terrific pieces. I've seen them produce quality television. There's one student who has produced like a 2-minute show called And a Kitchen Sink. Mm-hmm. There's the old saying, everything but the kitchen sink. Well, she created a show called And a Kitchen Sink. But I look at her and she has this ability to talk to the person through the camera lens, and she can deliver her content, whatever her script is, her communication. It's excellent. I can see her working in television as a host or something along those lines. I think she has higher aspirations. I think she wants to be a producer. But I've come through here and I've seen some, over the years, I've seen students create some quality content. The doors are open for any major to work on that. And it's heartening to see people who have that devotion. Now, some students come through here and they don't find that devotion. They may be distracted by a job or their classwork. But those that come here and are dedicated to learning, to experimenting, to have some pride in whatever they produce, we've got a lot of stars here too. And I've seen them go on to work at major publications, and I've seen them work in different fields. It's pretty prideful to watch a lot of people come through here and produce stuff.
Are they came here motivated, or you have some techniques to motivate
they
them?
They may have seen something that they saw on television. I could do that. Mm-hmm. I could write a newspaper article. I can write an online article. Things like that. They're a part of it. Maybe they're just curious, and then they have the chance to work with people their own age, who are going to motivate them, who are going to teach them, and that's part of our duty here as professional staff to guide them into what's quality content. But the motivation is going to be, a lot of it is going to be what they've learned here, or they just come here curious and they develop a relationship with the professional and student staffs and create some quality content.
If I ask you, why should I become a journalist or radio professional or mm-hmm. media professional in the United States, what will be your answer?
I'll go
should I become a journalist?
Okay. I'll go back to something I said earlier. You can make money doing just about anything, but not in every profession can you make a difference. In journalism, you are going to inform people, and you're going to tell them your opinion and or your facts about reporting, and you can make a difference out there. There are people who have this relationship with television news anchors. They don't know them personally. Maybe they follow them on Twitter and know them and have conversations with them. But you have that chance to make a difference in somebody's life. And that voice that would hear on the radio or online, we can see through the webcam. I can't find a show like yours anywhere else. Thank you for doing that. You have a chance to make a difference in somebody's life. And I think that should be a good motivating factor to get into this business, because it's going to be a while before you make money. But like I say, you can make money doing a whole bunch of different things. There's very few chances for you to make a difference, and the cream rises to the top. Those who do well are going to pull in the better salaries eventually.
You're teaching media management also. Can you share some key points on managing student media in particular? What are the most important things that I should know maybe in the process of managing organization like this? Managing millennials maybe in general.
Mm-hmm. I mean, from a student media organization? The students that we have here who are going to be the leaders of the different types of organizations, be it Fourth Estate, be it WGMURadio.com, be it Mason Cable Network, be it any of the journals. These are people who have to not only motivate fellow students, but have them held responsible for the content they are there. These people who are in leadership positions have a golden opportunity to develop a good leadership style. And I don't think when we're talking about where we talk about millennials, we talk about Generation X. I've seen 24 years, and students have not changed all that much. Sometimes they do need to be motivated, and in many cases, this is a student's first job. They haven't worked in high school, and they come here, and they're not used to what responsibility is. So the students here have to not only be passionate about what they want to produce here or have a guiding vision for their platform, but also learn how to motivate and to work with different students, close in age, all of that. And there's always the ability to work in teams as well. So it's an educational aspect for anybody working at any of these platforms, especially for the student leaders.
Now, you said that you can change something with working as a journalist. What do you think is radio losing its influence? Can you really change something in the society with radio journalism?
With radio journalism, as far as journalism...
Do you think that maybe some local website has more influence than some national radio station?
It depends on what the content they're producing. Is it content that somebody who you're targeting really wants? Do they really need to know that? There's always the, who's going to pay for it? There's the subscription rate, there's the advertising route, other things. But as far as radio journalism, it's a journalist is a journalist is a journalist. If I can teach you how to report a story, I can have you do it with television, with a camera. I can take that away and then hand you a cell phone, and you can produce everything for radio there. Or I can have you write online. If you are a good journalist, it doesn't matter what the platform is, you're going to be able to write it to communicate what the most important thing is for that particular targeted audience. Radio journalism, a lot of people don't hear radio journalism, so they're not exposed to it.
Okay, let's put it this way. How influencing is WGMU? Can you change anything working as a radio journalist at WGMU?
Yes.
And do you have that kind of examples?
Yeah, you have the ability to produce whatever content that you want here, your free form. What if you want to do a 30-minute weekly conversation with a leader on campus, be it the president, Angel Cabrera, or the president of the Student Government Association, or a professor who has this unusual hobby of leading a rock band, or a student who has overcome multiple sclerosis to achieve their degree. Yeah, you can produce shows like that. I mean, that's going to be journalism, because you're going to be asking them questions.
Do you have examples where WGMU is changing something on the campus, on the society?
Yes, we've with there have been several years where we had competing political talk shows.
Okay.
Not only, let me take that back, it's not so much competing, they have two hosts who are on the opposite side. I'm here on the left, I'm here on the right, and there would be that type of discussion. We're offering up people for the opportunity to do discussion shows or to do any types of special music shows. We've had that, and we've had the sports talk shows. One pair did so well, they won an award while working here. They were able to transfer their show to a bigger platform. Here you can develop the content and the practice to either go to the next level or to enjoy something that you like to do.
All the time we are hearing and talking about media bias, and when you say media bias, usually you think on TV news, mm-hmm. or maybe internet, websites, etc. Mm-hmm. Media biasness, is it worse or better on in the radio industry, what do you think?
There is still, radio has that perception of being the conservative choice with a lot of conservative commentators. Well, can't liberal radio work? Well, we tried it. Somebody tried it. Didn't make money.
Because of the audience?
Because of the audience. Because we have an older audience, listen, mostly white, mostly older, that wants to be fed that reinforced, oh, yeah, my point of view is correct. That's going to be the same thing with television. We've commodified news. The cable networks have commodified. And when I say commodify, we're taking an entity and we're making money off of it. We have cable networks, mainly through their opinion shows, that have commodified a news product that we're reinforcing the viewer's political perspective. Yeah, I'm right. Yeah, you told me. Yeah, I'm right. People don't want to be challenged like that anymore. So with radio, the conservative talk, okay, well, I don't think this generation's interested in not so much conservative talk, but they don't want to sit there and listen for it for 3 hours. But you can produce a podcast, yeah. And that's a way to reach the next audience because they like to download podcasts.
Then I have to ask you, what kind of format should student or college media should have? What kind of, is there any framework that they should fit in?
No. If there is a format, my thought is, if I've heard this on commercial radio, we shouldn't be doing that. But I'm just an advisor. Why would they listen to me, right? It's still the student organizations that make the decisions. But we've got to be an alternative as far as content choices, as far as people on the air. And that's going to be out throughout student media. Find something, find a niche that people can't find anyplace else. That's how you're going to attract an online audience, because we have too much competition in the world for ears. Why not make it something local, something unique, something that they can't find anyplace else?
Sure. We have to talk something about U.S. media. Of course, there are very much debates about how challenging is or become journalism in the United mm-hmm. States, especially in the last few years, especially with the rise of hate, bigotry, and mm-hmm. racism. Are these good or bad times to be a journalist in the United States? What do you think?
It's a challenging thing because if you're going to be a journalist, as I mentioned, you should be able to understand how a camera works. You should understand how to write for different platforms, because writing a story for online is different for video, which is different from audio. The challenge is because, first of all, the decline of the newspaper industry has forced media companies to shrink the number of people who are doing reporting. There's online options, but this is getting more competitive to get there. That's why I tell students, you want to be a journalist, you should be blogging, you should be writing, demonstrate that you can write and you understand and comprehend the issues of the day. And you're going to have to work through it as a freelancer or part-time and work your way up. But there's still good room for good journalism, and there's going to be people who are interested in that. And I still believe in straight reporting. Let the listener, the viewer, or reader decide for themselves what they make of that too. We should be the impartial people. As I like to say, we're broadcasters. We don't take sides. That seems to be more of a minority opinion because we should be getting our opinion out there. But I think the viewer, the listener, the reader is a lot smarter than that, and we should give them
the facts.
the facts, and let them decide on it.
Yeah, and you said that they're cutting jobs in journalism, right?
I've seen that. We've seen it at the national level. I've seen ESPN.
How is this influencing on journalists or on youth to become a journalist?
What the challenge is right
yeah.
now? Yeah. There are less opportunities. The opportunities are going to be in freelance work to prove that here's my pieces, these are my news stories I've written, and try to work their way up in doing that. But I think there's always going to be room for somebody who has a passion and a talent for writing and or reporting. Let's put an and in there, reporting. They can still work their way up, but they have to be very diligent. I have a student who started off doing internships locally at a magazine and a newspaper, and she moved to New York City. Did she have a journalism job set to go? No. She worked as a secretary at a major media corporation, and she was diligent and was able to write shorter pieces for the magazine, and now she's becoming an associate editor. A lot of this is going to be drive. Do you really want to do this? Are you really willing to move to the majors, the big city, to do a lot of this? So yeah. You've got to be willing to work your way up and work hard.
Yeah, there are also debates about the money issue in the media, especially mm-hmm. in the United States. Some mm-hmm. says that the market is shrinking or decreasing. I mean, the money in the media market is decreasing. Mm-hmm. Media advertising gone. So why there is a smaller amount of money in the market?
Because of social media. We can communicate. If I had a business, I can set up a Facebook page, and if I can target this to my correct audience, I've got maybe I have to pay somebody to maintain the account, maintain the website, maintain Facebook, maintain Twitter, or whatever platforms there are, and get that word out that way.
Our
targeted audience. Yeah. And it's not necessarily just a bricks and mortar store, it could be the online store. So you have the savvy business person who's figuring out where their audience lives, where their potential customers live. A lot of them may just live right here and figure out, oh, I'm looking at Facebook. Oh, here's this idea where I could spend my money this weekend. So I think that's where the challenge is as far as the lack of money. But once again, it's still a big business. And there'll always be commercials, as I tell my students. They just have to be more attention-grabbing, and they have to be more targeted to whoever you want to bring into your store or business.
And that means less money, less people, right? Are there less opportunities for the students?
If it trickles down that way, if the media organization is still relying on ad revenue, as we were mentioning before we went on camera, the business model is still in flux. How are we going to pay for our websites and other things when originally the internet was, oh, this is just a focus medium. I don't want to be inundated with ads. How do you get their attention? How are you going to pay for that, too? So that's where the challenge is. So the heritage media still needs to be around, and people do pay attention to that. It's just that we're getting a generation that will spend a lot of time on social media and get their content, what they want. And they get video, too. They don't have to sit through a half-hour or hour newscast. They can get their information more quickly. Now, do we have to do it through ads that you can't fast forward through? Yeah, you got to do that somehow. We see that a lot of the time on websites. Yeah. But it's got to be paid for because people really don't want to subscribe to a lot of things, and they have less money overall. So that's where the challenge is going to be. You still got to create the content, but how are we going to pay for it?
Yeah, and when you mentioned the social media, we have to mention the fake news. Whose fault it is?
Who created fake news? First person I heard from was our current president.
Yeah.
Fake news. Okay. That's such a nebulous term in my mind. okay, why is it fake? Or do you disagree with it? Or is it wrong? Well, if it's wrong, tell me why it's wrong.
Maybe it's because it's not true.
Okay, but is that the opinion of the person too? Or it could be facts. Okay, if we're wrong, show me where we're wrong. Give me where we missed out on the story. That's where you, as a journalist, you still have to come up with the facts too.
You seem not concerned about fake news.
No, because I'll put it this way. I'm concerned that people don't understand the difference between CNN and a fake CNN. You can develop a website that looks like CNN, and people will believe the stories. But we need more educated consumers. You can't fall for stories like that. And I'll have something else. If you ask a question about journalists, I have another thought about how you approach it as a career. But as far as the audience, sometimes they get pulled in by fake websites or things like that. You have to be more of a critical reader and a critical analyzer to know what the stories are and what's the agenda that a lot of these organizations are pushing through. Because unfortunately, there's that agenda too.
So you think the only solution is the audience?
We have to be better in presenting our content.
Is there any possibility for regulation, maybe, that market?
I would not want regulation because we're in a capitalistic society. We just need to have
on-air radio stations are regulated?
They're regulated through the FCC if you're going to be a terrestrial signal. Because if you want a license to broadcast over an antenna, the FCC says, well, you need this license to broadcast over a free radiating antenna. There's a difference because television stations, they broadcast over an antenna. But what I try to teach my students, if you want to watch MTV or you want to watch Freeform, you have to pay for that. Now, are they regulated by the FCC? Overall, not just like a regular television station, so they can get away with other content choices. But the regulation is still, if you're going to broadcast over an antenna, you still need that license from the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission.
Okay, so can we get rid of the fake news with regulation? What do you think? No.
Can we get? No. It's whatever the agenda is going to be for any type of media organization. I have to go back to one of my idols. His name is David Brinkley. He was a news anchor in the 60s and 70s. And he said, everybody has biases, but you can always be fair. I would want, if we could make a bias some kind of a form like this, I would say leave that outside your door and tell me what the story is. Because I think our audience is smart enough to understand when there's going to be an agenda. But everybody has biases. You can't ignore that. But if you're going to be a professional, you can be fair. And that's what I want to see.
Okay, Roger, thank you for being on my podcast. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to answer your questions too. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you.
You were listening to the podcast The Megaphone. This was all from our interview with the professor Roger Smith. I hope you learned a lot about media journalism and management in general. For more, be with us the next week and listen to the podcast at WGMU website. My name is Igor Stoyanov and I was your host.